Alright, take your breather, get some drink on board. You have two rounds to finish. You got 10 dumbbell snatches, single arm or double. The doubles will look like this. So two dumbbells between the feet. There's your lockout with two dumbbells. So two heads of the dumbbell on the floor to that lockout position. Or if you want to use that single, it's from between the feet, two heads of the dumbbell on the floor, and there's your lockout at the top. So you got 10 total, doubles or single. And if it's single, it's 5 off each arm. Then you have your dual dumbbell walking lunges. It's up to you where you hold the dumbbell. So you can have them suitcase or racked. Try on one or two. This is your finisher.
Sean Flannery, when I think of you, we come from the same part of Sligo, but we're different ages. So I have a memory of you as Michelle and Olivia Flannery's younger brother as a kid on Tully Hill in North Sligo. The one memory I do have of you, whenever we saw you coming to some event that your sisters were involved in or your family was involved in, you invariably had a football with you, or you were out playing on the grass with your mates. I have a vague memory of you being football mad since you were a kid. Does that sound right to you?
That sounds about right, yeah. I think that was, no matter where I went, I had a football with me. So that was part and parcel of growing up, whether it was in Oxfield or wherever. Oxfield was the main kind of spot anyways growing up for everything. So athletics or soccer or Gaelic, that was the place everything happened. So whether it was there or whether it was in the green around Raccormick or on Tully Hill, I don't think I was ever as happy as I was when I had a football. That's you know, I didn't need anything else, just a football.
And was it soccer, Gaelic, a mixture of the two?
A mixture of the two. When you think back to Raccormick National School, that was the Saturday morning, 10 o'clock, that's where it started with Michael McTighe at six or seven years of age, that's where it started. And then the community games, soccer was probably the first involvement in that side, and that progressed on to Yates United for a number of really, really successful, happy years. Danny McGinley was involved back then. I think it might have started out with Michael O'Boyle. That's how far you're going back. And, you know, they were just really happy memories, you know. And we had a great bunch. It was a great era of lads that came through together. And on both fronts, we won a fair bit. Like, it was a good bunch that came through at the same time when you look back. Really happy memories, yeah.
You mentioned you won a fair bit. You played schools football with Summerhill College. You played schoolboys football with the Sligo Leitrim underage teams. Yeah. And I think you won an All-Ireland League with Sligo Leitrim.
Yeah.
And an All-Ireland Senior A Schools Cup with Summerhill College, 1997 against
Clash the Spirit, Niamh. That was in April of 97, and that was the school's A final, and that was the culmination of a number of years of hard luck stories and getting so far and running into probably St Mary's or Galway or something along the lines. It was always us and them in Connacht, and thankfully by the time we got to Leaving Cert, we crossed the line when it mattered most, yeah.
And I remember a goal that was scored by you that day, a bicycle kick.
Yeah. It was a Lee Marshall cross that came in from the right wing. And yeah, it was a goal that brought us back level, I think. And then we conceded just before half time. But that team was notorious for coming back from, you know, blows that other teams wouldn't have dealt with, I don't think, you know.
So just to remind people listening who was on this team, Kieran Martin was on this team. Yeah. Derry City fans will know him. Michael McNamara, who would have been a Sligo Rovers teammate of yours and probably a GAA teammate of yours for a spell. Yeah. Philip Gallagher, Alan Cawley was part of that squad. It was a pretty... Aubrey Dolan. It was a pretty... Conor O'Grady, of course. It was a pretty star-studded cast.
It was an exceptional bunch. And it was an exceptional bunch of players that went through the whole cycle of secondary school for those 5 years, 4 or 5 years. And, you know, it's... A lot of people don't know the tough days that were in the previous years and getting so far and the near misses and being nearly there. But it was great to get over the line at the last hurdle, really, the last year for a lot of us. And you know, it was a tough day. But I can remember, you know, that whole season we might have conceded a goal, got back level, got a late winner. That happened a few times. So there was a great, a spirit in the team. A never-say-die sort of a spirit.
Well, my memory of your bicycle kick, you were very nonchalant about that, describing it, but it's the best goal I can remember ever seeing at Ray McSherry Park in all the years I've watched games there. Your football prowess attracted the attention of Sligo Rovers. Who at Sligo Rovers noticed you or approached you?
You're looking back at probably around the 1995 mark. I made a move from Yates United into the Showgrounds for the youth team, and John Lynch would have been involved management wise at that time. So the senior manager then was Steve Laurie Sanchez was the first team manager. And I can remember going in pre-season of that year in 95, going into the 95-96 season. And if the Sligo Rovers fans might remember the Lecoq Sportif, Tohors Chemist Lecoq Sportif strip, with the white and red squares, and there was a green and navy away strip. That was the era of the Intertoto Cup was around that time in 96. So, you know, it was a real busy time, and I can remember being in Laurie Sanchez's car on the way to pre-season training in it might have been Union Wood or somewhere. And only a few years previous, I was watching this fella, you know, score against Liverpool in the FA Cup final, and here he was driving the car on the way to pre-season, and I couldn't get my head around it. And as a 15-year-old. But it really didn't take long. I was in the first team squad. Steve Cotterill came in after that, and Jimmy Mullen came in after Steve Cotterill, and Jimmy Mullen was the first manager to put me on the bench, sort of thing, and get me involved at the end of the 96-97 season. So I was still like fourth year at the time.
Was Sligo Rovers the dream for you?
I think it was, yeah. I mean, even when we were in secondary school, looking at the 94 winning cup, the cup winning team in 94 would have been, you know, you were talking about the fellas on that team, and like 3 years later I was playing. So going from a 14-year-old to that's looking at going to Lands End Road watching this FAI Cup final.
Your first goal for Sligo Rovers?
First goal, Cork City away in early 98. Cork City, I think it was a 1-1 draw in the league. And I might have had an interview with yourself straight away after that game. That was early 98, yeah.
I'll have to dig out the old tapes for that one. You won a League Cup then with Sligo Rovers in 1998. Yeah. Nicky Reid would have been player manager?
Correct, yeah. Nicky Reid came in after Jimmy Mullen and was a player manager, and 98 was, we had a reunion actually last year with the 98. So a lot of fellas that left in 98 or 99, nobody's seen anybody since, and we all met up, or a good number of the squad came over to Sligo last summer Steve Burks and Peter Kubison and Marcus Hallows, Lee, you know, there's a lot of Steve Jones, Neil Ogden, fellas I haven't seen or heard of in 25 years. It was as if we just never left, or as if they never left. The teams back then, when you think about Shells and Cork and Pats, they were exceptional teams. So we managed to get through all the rounds in that League Cup, and Shells were an exceptional team. And they in the final, we beat them 1-0 over two legs. And my enduring memory is being up front on my own in the second leg against Pat Scully and Tony McCarthy, who were two seasoned, probably the toughest one of the toughest centre half pairs that I can ever recall being up.
They were kicking lumps out of you, is what you're trying to say, Sean.
They were, and I know I was 18 at the time, but I'd like to think that they got their fair share back as well. Yeah.
The first division championship title for Sligo Rovers in 2005. Were you part of that team as well?
Yeah, that was a great year, a great season. Sean Connor was involved, was the manager, and I'm just thankful that I got the chance to be part of that. That season was was an exceptional season actually, because it there was a number of tough years. The club was relegated in 0-0 and spent a few tough seasons in the first division. Didn't look like we're ever going to make much of a burst out of the first division until that year in 05, and it all came together. There was a great bunch of players put together, great squad, one of the best squads I can remember being in the place for the last 30 years. Yeah,
I think you played with other League of Ireland clubs as well.
Yeah, sometimes the grass seems greener, and I know around the 2002 mark, and it's a regret I have. I went to Finn Harps in 2003. The main reason I went was because Jonathan Speake was the manager. To be honest, he was very convincing, and he would have been somebody I really really looked up to. Growing up, he was playing with Derry at the time. He was brilliant, a brilliant striker, and he convinced me to go up there for, and I was only there for a season. It didn't work out. There was too much travelling involved. In hindsight, you know, Don Reardon was the manager in Sligo, and if I was to go back, I would definitely, you know, stay where I was in Sligo. And there's nothing I can do about it now. You know, there's nice people in Finn Harps, nice club. It was a great squad of players, but I just it wasn't home for me, and it's a regret I'd have that I somewhat left. It just seemed like the grass was greener on the other side, and when it wasn't. And if I could go back, there was no need for me to leave here.
Alongside your soccer commitments, you were a good Gaelic footballer as well, and you were part of Sligo senior Gaelic football teams. So you were another one of those multi-talented players trying to balance competing commitments.
Yeah, in hindsight, again, it's you can't serve two masters. I know in certain counties like Cork, had certain players could manage it, especially when the season ran in a way that the soccer season used to start in September and finish in May. So you had the summer, you could play Gaelic, and the likes of Dave Barry and these players did it very successfully, and it was accepted. But the season changed here from into a soccer season, and you know, growing up, it was always Gaelic and soccer. They were the big two team sports in Drumcliff or whatever. And when it got to a serious stage, though, trying to serve both was probably foolish. It didn't work out. Because you end up doing is falling between two stools, really.
Did you play senior championship football for Sligo?
I did, yeah, I did. Just in the 1 year, maybe 99. And again, at that time, you were pl- trying to play both codes, training and playing for multiple teams, you know, look, in hindsight, it's way too much. The volume is way too much, and that's when you get to the 17, 18 year old mark, if you're serious about a sport, I think everything else has to take a back seat. I'd recommend kids to play a sport, as many sports as possible growing up. That's where the community games is great, and if parents can manage to transport kids from A to B Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, so if they can do that for a number of years, all good, because I think there's a great benefit for kids to get the most from every sport. But when they hit the 17, 18 mark, I think they need to focus on, if they're serious about, you know, doing as well as possible, it's to focus on one and put everything into that. Put everything into that, because otherwise, yeah, you're clashing and you're falling out with managers, and you know, somebody's going without you. So there's no real point in it. I think if you were to use your experience, that's what I'd recommend someone to do.
Let's fast forward to today. We are seated on beanbags on the floor of the main SFX gym here, which is your day job, in Rathcormac Village in North Sligo. And we're surrounded by kettlebells, dumbbells, and pieces of equipment. I actually don't know what they are. You'd have to educate me on that, but it's impressive stuff. So you've stayed involved in sport fitness.
Yeah, probably around the end of the 2008-2009, I had some ankle issues, and my team sport days were drawn to a close. So I had to make a choice of, you know, what's next. I had to replace something, and I've always enjoyed, you know, training and having a routine of training. So the triathlon world called out to me at that time. It stood out as something that I could give a good go at. So I put everything into that for a number of years, and it started off in a sprint triathlon in the sports complex in October of 2008, where I can remember doggy paddling the 10 lengths, and really, I think I was second last out of the pool. There was no bikes left in the bike park when I got out. There was none. There was no problem finding my bike, because there was two there left. And then I cycled on a mountain bike that had slipping gears that was too small for me. And it was a cycle around the lake, or out to Carrow, back in by the Holywell, back into Carrow, back to the sports complex. And then you're looking at, that was my first experience of triathlon. And it just, I got the bug at that point. And I spent a few really happy years progressing to the sprint distance and the Olympic distance, and went on to do two Ironmans at that point, around the 2012-2013 mark. At that point then, the gym was always something that I really enjoyed doing. So I went and got my qualifications through Limerick. The NCF was with the National Council for Exercise and Fitness, and that was, did my certificates and all part-time, the diplomas, got my degree out of UL in exercise and health fitness. And then I did a master's in LIT through LIT Thurles. That was in sports strength and conditioning. And that brought me up to the 2017 mark. And I felt at that time, now's the time to open up a spot. Because I was a kind of freelance at that point, was working out of ROM, and I had my circuit classes in Clooney, Oxfield, various locations. I was strength and conditioning coach with Sligo Rovers at the time. I started training Mona McSharry around the same time, around that 2015, 2016 mark. So around when the plan was, this place was empty all those years, and really...
And this place was your dad's old garage?
was the old car dealership in Raccormick, yeah. So it was an Opel an Opel dealership from 81 to 97. So 81 to 88 was Opel. 88 to 07 then, 88 to 07 was Nissan, and 07 to 12 was Citroen. And then the crash happened, and everything just stopped. Everything just stopped. The global downturn, and it could be said, the reason why we're sitting here now is because of the global, that issue that happened, that's how things just fell apart, because I was working here as well. I was working here in the dealership, and this was a workshop. It's a different type of workshop now. And that was my office, and it still is the office. But it was the opportunity to go, all right, what do you really, really want to do here? You've no qualifications, what do you want to go and do? So that's how it all started. And the circuit classes, working with various teams, the Sligo Hurlers and the Sligo Rovers, working with individuals, and that's where it kicked off. And in 2018, it felt like the time was right to open up, and that's what happened. Thankfully, it's worked out really well since.
Well, it surely has. Can I take you back to last year?
Yeah.
Saturday, the 23rd of March. Can you talk me through that day, or what you feel is relevant in terms of the build-up to that day?
This time, or you know, the early part of last year was you know, was a challenging time, and that area out here was being developed. The adjoining gym area was being developed to bring it in line with here. So this was the original floor area. So that was being done at the same time, January, February of last year. Whilst everything was happening class-wise, the normal schedule was. And I was probably doing, you know, 90% of the classes at that time. Kevin Brady was helping with some of the classes, and you know, we have three young girls, and Bonnie is the youngest, and she was yet to turn one, so she wasn't sleeping that much or well. So I think the combination of the lack of sleep and the stress of just trying to keep everything going, and I was still trying to train myself, and I was still trying to push it and all sorts, and not that was a reason, but there was a tear in an artery in the back of my neck, left sided, and it was bothering me, you know. I had headaches and I had that neck pain, but I put it down to, you know, a pull muscle maybe in the neck, and the headaches. Down to,
you didn't know it was a tear at the time,
no.
Did you?
No, I didn't know. Whether a CAT scan at the time would have shown that, I don't know. But what happened then, you know, it came out of the blue. It was a tear in the artery. A blood clot came out of the tear and caused a stroke on that Saturday morning, and thankfully I got an ambulance to Sligo that morning pretty quick, and they had a CAT scan and they got blood thinners into me.
Did you know what was happening to you at the time?
I knew I was in big trouble, because I lost a lot of function, you know, anything that you can think about stroke related, and when you think stroke you think about somebody in their 80s or 90s. But the left side face just went numb, and the, you know, that drooping mouth that you hear about that happened, and I lost my swallow, so I couldn't. There was drool, the saliva just drooling out of the side of my mouth. My left side completely shut down, so I couldn't move my left leg or left arm, and you know, I was vomiting, cold sweats. The balance and coordination just went out the window.
And what age are you?
44. At the time I was 44. Yeah. I'm 45 now, but when it happened, 44. I knew I was in big trouble, and the ambulance got me to Sligo. This CAT scan highlighted the clot, so they got blood thinners into me to get to work on the clot, but they were in serious, there was serious concern. I can remember, like, Stephen Glamartin was the doctor who dealt with me when I got to Sligo, and I know Stephen from the Tubbercurry GA days and Sligo days, and I could see the concern in his face when I was there, because I was failing every coordination test miserably. You know, I just couldn't touch. He was asking me to touch my nose with my finger, and I was completely missing my head. You know, it was, I couldn't understand. I couldn't believe what was happening, because it was like looking at somebody else doing this. And you're saying, "Oh, come on, will you come on? How can you not do that?" And he had massive concern, and he said, "You know, we need to get this guy to Dublin, to Beaumont, because we can't deal with him here. In case this gets to a stage where he needs to get the part of the skull removed or something, he's going to have to go there." So I was in an ambulance before I knew it, to Beaumont. And that was that Saturday. And I was probably in Beaumont by lunchtime on that Saturday. And it was a series of CAT scans over the next number of days showed an increase in the brain swell, which wasn't a good sign. So they were very, very bleak, worrying days for everybody. And you know, there was a lot of uncertainty at that time.
And were you lucid, conscious through all this?
I was, yeah. I can remember most of it, yeah. But the cerebellum was the area that was affected, so that has an influence on balance and coordination, swallow, speech. I can remember pleading with the paramedic on the ambulance to Beaumont for some painkillers, because my head was just absolutely bursting. It was the worst headache that you could imagine, and that headache stayed there constantly for like 6 weeks, 24/7, no matter what medication you took, and I took a lot of medication. I was given an awful lot of medication, which I was happy to take. And I'd be someone who, if I took two headache tablets a year, that'd be the height of it. And now I was taking 6 or 8 tablets every couple hours, you know.
What was your wife Maggie and your family connections being told?
It wasn't very hopeful at all, you know. It was at that point, that Saturday, it was can this fella survive? They couldn't give a definite answer to that question. So they did tell my family on the way to Beaumont, you know, they were on about going home to pack bags and stuff, and they were told, you got to follow the ambulance straight away and just be prepared for the worst when you get there, sort of thing. So I'm not sure if people know how bad it was, because there's a few videos on the go, but those videos were at a point where things were on the up, that they were recovery videos, so that's when things were, the green light was given to recover. But at that point, that Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, you know, it was constant decline. And the consultant in Dublin wasn't at all hopeful, and he was just praying for that the swell was going to reduce. And thankfully, by the Wednesday, it reduced. So it went from can he survive to he might survive, but we're not sure of his deficits. He's lost a lot of function. He may or may not get some of those back. It went from there to a few days later, the swell is reduced. That's what we wanted to see. You're out of the woods, but you've lost everything. But the good news is you can start recovering, and it's up to you now how good you want to recover. This is all down to you. And I was looking behind me. Was he talking to somebody else? Because a couple of days previous, you were being told that, you know, you mightn't drive again, you mightn't walk again, your balance, you may not get things back to now you can recover 100% and beyond if you want. And that was, I couldn't believe what was being said. And I don't think he finished the sentence when I was out the door trying to improve. And from then on, that was the end of, so that was the beginning of April. So last weekend was Easter weekend last year. I was in Bowman, so today is Wednesday. So you're looking at tomorrow of last year. I came home to Sligo Hospital. I left Bowman, or date-wise, probably Friday. At that point, so this day last year, I was flat out in the physio room in Bowman.
There's a word you use to describe how you felt being in hospital in a ward or an area of the hospital where most of the other patients, if not all of them, are a lot older than you, because here you were, Sean Flannery, fit as a fiddle, a guy everyone sees eating fruit, seeds, nuts. You don't smoke. You, to us, lead a very healthy lifestyle. And here's a guy who's just had a stroke at the age of 44. How did you feel in the stroke recovery environment?
I was definitely confused. I couldn't understand what had happened or why it happened. And if you were to ask me how I felt, I was embarrassed to be in that situation. I was embarrassed to be in a position where I had lost all function, and I just couldn't get my head around why it happened. And you know, the underlying health issues is the main reason why a lot of people, it's not the only reason, but for a lot of people are in for various, the high blood pressures and the heart issues and the high blood cholesterol and various health issues, heavy smokers, heavy drink, whatever it is that contributes to them suffering from a hemorrhage or a clot. But you know, it's not the case for everybody. There was one guy in it, there was another guy in there who had a collision on a ski resort. Somebody ran into him while he was standing, and that caused him to have multiple brain hemorrhages, and he was in there, and it was Jerry Copeland is the chap's name. He's a very, you know, highly renowned runner from in Dublin circles, and he has had a massive battle since. And we were there at the same time, kind of doing the same thing at the same time, just trying to fight to regain. But what I do think is that people might think my lifestyle caused me to be in the position, but what the consultants and the doctors and the nurses and whoever I met, they were very quick to tell me your lifestyle is what's going to get you back on track, and your lifestyle is what's going to help you. It was very misfortunate what happened to you, but you can't pin it down to your lifestyle or doing whatever you do. And in effect, what you do is what's going to be the difference for you going forward in making a full recovery or not.
So your fitness lifestyle actually helped you on the road to getting back to being able to walk properly, to balance properly, to do the things you used to do.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. I think there is a saying that you have to suffer, you have to endure hard things voluntarily, so that when things happen unplanned, that you're able to deal with hard things happening. So if you don't voluntarily do hard things, how are you meant to deal with something that happens to you when it comes out of the blue?
I want to read a sign that you have here high up on the wall in your gym.
Yeah.
The top word says determination in loud black bold letters, and underneath there's this phrase: the will to succeed can overcome the greatest adversity.
Yeah.
Now, that was up there probably before you got ill.
No, it wasn't. I get a lump on my throat now when hearing you say that, because that slogan, those words were on the wall in the physio room in Beaumont. They're the first time I seen them, in a wheelchair, waiting for my turn. with the physio, and I looked up at that. It was in a glass case on the wall beside the office in the physio room in Beaumont, and so I looked at that every day, and you know, that was. I can remember saying to myself, I said, determination. Determination. I'll show you determination. Yeah, that was my. That was my mentality at the time was, I'm going to show everybody, myself, everybody. I'm going to show you a level of determination nobody has seen before.
Your recovery, there might be an impression that this happened very quickly, that you got back. Yeah. I'm looking at you today. Yeah. I can see no discernible difference physically or mentally from the Sean Flannery I knew prior to your stroke. But can you describe what the recovery went through? Because people might have a conception that it all went swimmingly.
Yeah. I guess it's... I've trained most days over the last 20 years. Most days I've trained, so that I couldn't train as I wanted to. So it was recovery. So it was work trying to retrieve or regain things.
But the starting point is you couldn't stand, walk, talk for a while. Yeah. Am I right? Yeah. So describe where you started from and where you got to.
So lying in a bed in Beaumont. I had no core strength, so I couldn't sit up. So that the first thing was, can I sit up? That was the first. So once I could do that, that was the first win. And every day was then, what's the next target? What's the next thing I can try and do? So can I use my hands to eat my breakfast and not be spoon fed? That was the next challenge. So my left side shut down, so I was trying to get my left hand to get yogurt or whatever onto a spoon and see could I put it into my mouth. That was a huge achievement, a huge win. And then, you know, it was, can I sit on the side of the bed? Can I sit on the side of the bed? And this all sounds ridiculous, but it's the stuff you take for granted for everybody. Everyone takes it for granted. So what was out of reach was going to the toilet. Was out of reach. It just wasn't going to happen. That was way on down the track. Pretty much bed bound, you know, confined to a bed for a number of days. And then there was a chair at the side of the bed, and I used to spend time just looking at the chair, going, "Can I get from here into that chair? And can I get back into this?" And fatigue is a massive factor in brain injuries or whatever. So I was dealing with a phenomenal amount of fatigue, and still am. But it's nothing like at that time. At that time, you're literally working for 30 seconds and resting for 2 hours before you could muster up the energy to do it again. And then that 30 seconds became a minute. That minute became two. And then... The recovery time probably stayed around the same time, but the amount of time you could work increased marginally. And I don't know how anybody who doesn't have a background in you know, physical exercise or activity or training, I don't know how anybody is meant to just switch on a light and start to do this stuff, because And a lot of people would depend on physios and therapists and various people to do, but they might only see them for an hour or two a week. So what did they do for the rest of the week? But my objective was to make the most use out of the day that I could possibly. So I had to factor in the rest, the recovery, and go again. And then it was, can I sit down, get back in? Can I use the Zimmer frame? Can I get to the toilet? Can I get to the shower? I got stuck on the shower chair one day. Again, embarrassment. I couldn't get up out of it. I had to ring for assistance to be picked up out of it. And I said, "I'm coming back tomorrow, and I'm doing this again, and I'm not ringing that bell." So I came back the next day on the Zimmer frame, had the shower, got up out of the shower chair, got back on the Zimmer frame, back to the bed. And that's it. And that's day on day on day. Just improvements or increasing what you could do.
So you were celebrating taking a pee like scoring a goal for Sligo Rovers.
It was a massive. It felt like a massive win, and I was clenching my fists when I made progress. And when you bottom out, when you have nothing and you bottom out, every day is an up. So every day is a win. Every day is a win. And I've been winning every day since.
You sound very strong mentally, Sean. Were you as strong during the rehab as you sound?
I would have always thought that I had a reasonably good, how would you say it? Mental strength, particularly when I went down the individual. I don't think I was as strong mentally in team sports. I think I could have performed better if I had a better mental attitude in team sports, if you can understand what I'm saying. But soon as you depend on yourself with individual sports, triathlon or gym competitions or whatever you're doing, if you're dependent on yourself, and I never probably, I might have suffered from a bit of anxiety playing team sports, but I've never been anxious with individual sports for some reason. Whatever happened in the years gone by, I guess I just switched into some sort of mode that I can't explain last year. And my family were at the forefront of my drive, not wanting to accept what happened, but when I was given the green light and I was told that this is up to you, it's going to be repetitions now that brings things back, to retrain your, remap your, rewire your brain, it's going to be repetitions. And I don't think anybody could, I don't think you could have had a better person to tell that to. I honestly don't think. And did I do 1,000 reps a day? I probably did 1,000 reps a day for those months of April, May, June, July, August, September.
This was at home?
This was in mixture of Beaumont, Sligo, and home, and here on the floor. And Audrey Cleary, Shane Sweeney were our two physios that are gym members, and they helped me very much last summer, when I came back in April into May. They were a huge help to me to get me into a frame of mind as well, to really kick on and challenge me, progress. And I was back in the classes here in the boot camp classes in May, back into the S&C classes here.
Okay, you went to your own gym classes as part of your rehabilitation?
I did, in bare feet. So in bare feet, to try and figure out, to get the feeling back in my legs, to get the contact between the floor and my feet. I had to deal with fatigue. My right leg still hasn't got sensation back in it since. So it has nerve pain in it, and it hasn't got the same sensation. So for that reason, I did a lot of workouts in my bare feet. It wasn't for any other reason, but when I think back to, when I look out the door here now and see the sky, the blue sky, it was like this last summer, last May. So I was here, and it was great to be amongst everybody. So when I was part of the classes, I knew that the recovery process had gone well. But I haven't stopped doing any of those balanced coordination drills. I think everybody should be doing them anyway, because as you get older.
I was just going to ask you, was there a particular day or moment or eureka moment where you felt, I'm back, the old Sean Flannery is back?
I don't think so. I think I was really in autopilot. I think I was an autopilot. I didn't think, right, this is where I am, this is what I have to do. Although, if you were to ask me, how would I do it? Would I do anything different from last year? I wouldn't. I'd do it exactly the same way. But it happened automatically, as in, it was literally just autopilot. And how people say, how did you do this? And how did you manage to do that? I can't say for sure. It just happened, because it's what I do. It's who I am. It's in my DNA. I couldn't expect anybody else to do that, but it's what I did, and it's what I do again, no problem.
Is your recovery complete now? You're back working and have been for some considerable time. You're doing all the normal things a dad does, bringing your kids to training, to whatever classes they go to. Yeah. I don't know if you have to take any medication. I mean, would you regard yourself as fixed?
I thought I was going to be on medication for life, really. So I was expecting the blood thinners and the statins and all that sort of stuff to be part of the daily routine. And then last October, the consultant in Sligo told me, you've no underlying health issues. Everything is healed. There's a very little risk of reoccurrence. So there's no need for you to be on medication. So you come off everything. So there's no medication, no more medication. The fatigue levels, what is left is that sensation in the right leg. I have to sleep every day for maybe an hour, but that recharges my batteries and I'm good to go again for the evening.
Most Irish men do that already, Sean.
Yeah. It's a shame it took something so drastic to make that realization, because it's a great, but there is a certain amount of guilt involved in it though as well. Every day you're kind of, I have to sleep. So whatever you're doing, whatever has to be done, has to stop, has to wait.
Why do you feel guilty?
Because when you have duties and you have responsibilities and you have things to do, it seems like you're sandbagging it a little bit by going, oh, I have to rest, I have to take a nap, I have to sleep. But it's part of the recovery process. And sometimes when you look around, I don't know, you'd feel like people might be thinking, oh, this fella's gone off for a nap again, and X, Y, and Z needs to be done, and he's gone off for his sleep. But if that's the only thing that's left over from what happened, it's not bad at all, you know. And if my right leg never returned sensation-wise, it hasn't stopped me. So I know there's something you're not aware of. I'm going to tell you now, because it's what's been happening. When I was lying in a bed last April, I said, when I knew recovery was on the cards, when it was on the table, I said, I'm going to be in the 45 to 49 year old category for next year's CrossFit Games. This is when I couldn't stand up now. I said, I wonder, is that possible? And first of all, last September there was a run in Beaumont. It was a 5K run in Raheny, a fundraiser for Beaumont, for the physio department, ironically. And the sign for this run was in Beaumont. So every day when I was wheeled by the porter to the physio room, or I was on a Zimmer frame or whatever, this sign was there. Maggie, my partner, was there with me, and I remember saying to her, what about that? And she goes, will you just concentrate on trying to stand up first, you know? See, can you walk? See, can you get yourself walking again without, unaided, before looking at anything? And I said, we'll come back for that, and we'll do it all together. Myself, yourself, and the three girls will do that. And this was early doors now. And I was like, well, I wonder, is that possible? And she was like, look, it's not even highly unlikely. It's impossible right now. So that was the initial target. September came around and we all did it together, and I ran it pushing the buggy and had part of it with Leah on my shoulders. And if it was a 50k, it was a 5k, if it was a 50k, I would have done it gladly. It was an amazing day, because it was a huge thing, a huge target, goal, and achievement to reach when you think back to 6 months previous to where things were. So at that point, that gave me a massive boost that, do you know what, I can look at something and I can work towards it and I can do this. So then the CrossFit Games became a target. So I started training in September for that. The Open happened in February. You had three workouts to do, which were done here. And the top 200 in each in your age category advanced. This is worldwide. The top 200 advanced, and I came in around, I think I came in 179th. And then the semi-finals happened last weekend, just gone. So this had to be done in a particular gym with judges and particular criteria, so I had to go to Drogheda for it. And my overriding memories of Drogheda was not Hunky Dory Park, United Park, and the trip through Cavan and Virginia and RD and Slay, and it was like a throwback to the 90s or the noughties going to Drogheda. But that's where I ended up on Thursday night, Friday, Saturday and Sunday workouts, and all those workouts were videoed and submitted. So the semi-finals of the CrossFit Games are now over, waiting on clarification of placings, but I'm in around the 119, 120 mark as it stands. And the objective last April to now has been met, and every day since has been built for this last weekend, which went very well.
This is the last question.
Yeah.
As somebody who at the age of 44 developed a clot,
yeah,
had a stroke,
yeah,
and has made this amazing recovery to be where you are as we talk right now, what do you want people listening to this interview to take from your story?
I think the overriding feelings would be how grateful I am, how fortunate I am that the treatment happened so fast. Everything was in my favour. It was a very misfortunate thing, but there was huge fortune involved in how quickly that I was treated. For those initial four or five days, I was at the mercy of faith or religion or science or medicine, whatever you want to call it. I had no say in anything. I was just hoping that my body would react well to the situation, and that I was given a green light. But once I got the green light, and not everybody gets a green light, you know, a lot of people suffer, and it doesn't matter how determined they are or how what their mindsets are like, they're never going to recover properly again, you know. And I'm just hugely, hugely grateful and fortunate that I had a say in making a full recovery. But anybody who suffers anything, that's, don't even go to the hospital, go to A&E, go, just cut out any messing and any doubt at all, and get scanned, get treated, get, because the early treatment, if there's any drooping, any of those symptoms of a drooping face or drooping mouth, loss of feeling in the face, arms, legs don't work as they should do. If there's anything like that, is not to just go, especially for fellas, not to go, I'd be grand, or I'll just see how it is tomorrow. Just go and get it seen to, you know, yeah. There's no time like the present, and your saving grace will be how fast you things are pinpointed. And on top of that, if you do have a chance, if something bad happens to you and you have a chance to recover, you know, what you put in is it's not an impossible task. You have a say in it, and doing it for your family, doing it for your kids, to use that as a motivation. And if you can use your body, if you can move your body today, don't take it for granted. that when things are gone, you know, there's no point in reacting, trying to react when things go awry. You should appreciate the fact that you're able to move, do the simplest of things. Don't take it for granted that tomorrow's going to be the same and the day after. Things can change at the flick of a switch. So to appreciate what you have when you have it.